This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everybody. A little bit of snow out there in the metro region anyway. So if you do happen to be in an area where you're getting a little bit of precipitation, keep that speed down a bit and you'll get to where you're going. It could be a little bit slick, although I found it more wet and slushy than anything else when I was on the go this morning. Well, the provincial election is underway in the midst of this weather. And while the majority of those who responded to VOCM's question of the day today indicate they're not paying attention to the campaign, there are a number of groups who are keenly interested in what's happening. Equal Voice is dedicated to advocating for the equal representation of women in Canada's parliament, provincial and territorial legislatures, and on municipal and band councils. Well, according to my shaky math and with the help of our web editor, it appears as though approximately 34% of the 127 candidates seeking election to the legislature this time around are either women, trans, or non-binary. Courtney Clark is the media liaison for Equal Voice NL, and she's here to talk about the efforts to get more women participating in the political process. Hi, Courtney.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So what exactly is Equal Voice and what does it do?
So I'm part of the leadership committee for the Newfoundland and Labrador chapter of Equal Voice, and it's a national organization with a mandate to support and elect more women and non-binary people across all levels of office. So we do a lot of support work before elections. We kind of go a bit quiet during the election, and then we come back and debrief afterwards and start all over again for the next election cycle.
So what are some of the barriers to offering yourself for nomination and election?
There's a couple, and it really depends on the way you look at it. We're starting week two of this election right now, and one thing is harassment, the other thing is support services. So we're only week two into the election, and we've already seen several women facing harassment. There's two types of harassment. One is more overt, and the other is more aggressive. Mostly the aggressive is found online comments and more subtle misogynistic comments during phone calls and door-to-door campaigning.
So where does it come from? Why? Why is it happening?
Well, I mean, all politicians get some hate. It's impossible to make everybody happy, and that's the kind of criticism that's full on expected when you go into public office, no matter who you are. But female candidates in particular get that general political harassment, and then on top of that, also get the gender-motivated harassment. And that's a whole other level of abuse. Basically, it's well-intentioned sometimes, more to do with not understanding what the benefits of diversity in office may mean. It could be a scare of change. When I look at the harassment that's happening following this election, and when I click into a harasser's profile, 100% of the time it is a middle-aged or older white man. And that's not saying that all men are like it, but the ones who are doing the harassment generally are. And they're the ones who've likely never really faced oppression or they've always had the highest form of political representation, meaning that they're the most considered and more privileged of our sites.
Yeah, it's rather unfortunate because there are an awful lot of people out there who support anyone who would, you know, stick their neck out. They might not like your politics, but there's a lot of people who respect people who would, you know, make that effort, if you will. So it's really very unfortunate when there's a certain group that, for whatever reason, their own, I don't know, sense of weird humor or something. I don't know what it could possibly be, but who feel like they need to make a point of doing this kind of thing. Do they tend to be, you know, especially in the online community, do they tend to be local, or are they? Is there a broader kind of thing happening there?
It seems mostly local, but we do see it coming from, sometimes you can't tell where they're from. So when it comes to the more overt aggressive harassment, mostly online, people are much more audacious when they're hidden behind the computer screen. So female candidates, they take all of this time to have a well thought out campaign. They show that they have real professional, academic and community experience to deserve their platform, only to have their voice, their clothes and their body shamed. When it's at the door, it's more often veiled. Most often than not well-intentioned, but that doesn't make it less harmful or annoying. So sometimes at the door, a woman will hear, sure, you look too young to be running for politics, or you're too pretty to be doing things like this. And our local Equal Voice co-chair, Jillian Pearson, said it best. A man is not knocking door to door and hearing, you look too middle-aged to be doing this, or my God, you're some freak. So those kinds of comments show you that, you know, it kind of questions the candidate's credibility and shows that there's some unconscious biases that need to be looked more deeply into.
And I want to explore that a little bit further later on in the show. But, you know, when somebody puts themselves up for election, there's a lot of considerations, of course. And the big one that I would come immediately to my mind if I was going to go down that road was, do I need backers? Do I need money? How does that work?
Mm-hmm. So we do need to see that support coming from our actual provincial parties. So whether that's financial, services, time, you accommodate those extra burdens that women candidates face in terms of family schedules, elder parent care, and so on, because as much as we'd like to believe that it's a shared responsibility in 2021, women ultimately still do the bulk of the family work and the housework on top of having equally demanding careers as their male counterparts when considering heterosexual relationships. And we do see our political leaders in this province being supportive. I mean, the PC Party has a women's association. The NDP have a specific fund set up to help women candidates run. And I guess what's super interesting about this campaign is that the women candidates in particular are supporting one another. So even though some of them are directly running against each other in a district, they are rooting for one another. They even have a shared playlist of empowering music to aid them on the campaign trail. And you don't really see that kind of thing happening in politics. So I love that personally our female candidates can support and respect one another while challenging them purely based on politics. They lead by example as to the integrity and respect that we need to see in political office.
My guest today on Target is Courtney Clark. She's the media liaison for Equal Voice. And when we come back, I want to talk about some of the things that you need to consider before offering yourself for election. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today on Target is Courtney Clark. She's with Equal Voice NL. And of course, we're in the midst of a provincial election, even though last look at the question of the day, 59% said they weren't paying any attention to it. It's unfortunate. This is the democratic process. And I mean, whoever gets chosen to either lead the province or represent your needs in your district, the choice is up to you. So it's very important that people get engaged. Courtney, what kind of things does a candidate need to know before offering themselves for political office?
There's a couple of things that you should make sure that you're comfortable with and that you're prepared for. So choosing your campaign volunteer team is crucial, especially having a campaign manager or someone close by who understands the logistics of the campaign, especially this time around with how quick it started and how quick it's going to end. When forming your actual campaign volunteer team, look at the skills that you have, look at the personality traits that are most predominant in you, and try and find people who have other personality traits, other skills to kind of balance that out and give you more perspective. Try to have some diversity in terms of having women, men, the LGBTQ community, having some BIPOC representation, Black, Indigenous, people of color, to ensure that you are not escaping any unconscious biases yourself. And look at your personal life and figure out who you can ensure your family responsibilities, because you know, you have to make sure your kids are still being picked up from school, and that if you have elderly parents, that they get to and from their appointments. Talk to your workplace about leave options, because it's pretty much impossible to work full-time and run a campaign. Being a part of a party versus being independent obviously will provide some more financial support and resources, and getting comfortable with the idea of fundraising. Oftentimes, women are known for having more cases of imposter syndrome, and that can come out as in having no confidence in the fundraising side. So being comfortable with the idea of asking for money for your campaign, it's not asking people to support you, it's asking people to support your vision and ideas for the community. And at Equal Voice, We do as much as we can to prepare women candidates through various online meetings. We have a national campaign school that goes through all of these things, other shared resources, and then we debrief that on that subject at the end to see how we can become even better for the next election.
You sort of touched on it there, but is it important to be part of a party and dyed in the wool, you know, sort of coming up through the ranks, so to speak, within a party structure?
I do believe that's more of a personal choice. I don't think either is better than the other, but you do get that guaranteed support of your party backing versus being independent, and it often costs a bit more to be an independent candidate.
What can parties do to identify greater diversity within their own base?
Yeah, well, a lot of them already do have some good things in place. Like I mentioned, the PC Party and their Women's Association, having that fund available for NCT women candidates that is shared among all female candidates. But really, it's just keeping engaged with the community, keeping engaged with groups like us, the status of Women Council, all of these groups, because a lot of really great community changers and makers are in these community groups, and they tend to be the ones that inevitably step up to run for office.
I know generalizations are dangerous, but it seems to me that most people who offer themselves for politics, it isn't just something they say, oh, I think I'm going to run. They've been thinking about it for a very, very long time. It's something, you know, they've had as a goal for years, if not decades. So is there a particular skill set that is beneficial if you are the type of person, a young person in particular, who is interested in a political life at some point? Is there some way, a skill set that is beneficial that will help you, in the long run?
Well, you're definitely right that politics is not really an impulse decision. It's often based on either having faced something in your own life that inspires you to want to make greater change, or it's, you know, the ways that younger people could really get ready for that. You don't have to have particular skills, but it helps to have a lot of transferable skills, to be following politics years before to ensure that you know the history and the values of each party, to know, are you going to be running municipally, provincially, or federally, because all are very different campaigns. And that really depends on what are you passionate about, what do you care about, what keeps you up at night. And then look at what parts of the government are responsible for that, and that's probably the best place you should go. But it's making sure that, you know, you're taking care of your reputation as an individual during that time period, and also really becoming well-versed on what the needs of your community are. So surrounding yourself with diversity, again, is the best way that you could do that.
Where's a good place to start? It's often, we've got the municipal elections are right around the corner. We're talking about the provincial mm-hmm. election right now, but municipal elections are right around the corner in September. And we've seen councils in the past that have been entirely female, and in smaller communities in some cases, that's all that's available to on council, if you know what I'm saying, because some mm-hmm. people move back and forth to go to work. So is municipal politics a good, I guess, breeding ground for getting used to public life?
It certainly doesn't hurt, because you don't have to be affiliated with a party to run for municipal politics. If you're running in your own municipality, you live in that area, so you should know what the issues are. You're familiar with the geography for your actual campaign effort. And it's generally a little bit less expensive than a provincial or federal election. So it definitely doesn't hurt to start there, but it doesn't mean you have to.
And of course, when you get involved in politics, what do you need to know once you're on the ground? Because it's not all just, legislation and working your way through those kinds of things. More often than not, it's just answering calls from people who are looking for a little direction.
Exactly. It helps to have the answers right away, but it's important to also be transparent and understand that you don't have all the answers, because everybody is living a different life and has different needs. So having a good network to know who to reach out to, and having good relationships, not just within your own party if you're in one, but across party lines, it's important to stay engaged with the community groups so you can give good resources when it's asked for. And it's just knowing how to talk to people and how to be empathetic, because if they're calling you with a question, they care about it. It's kept them up at night, and it's important that you treat it any way that you would treat your own political issues that you're passionate about.
So it's not 9 to 5. You have to be prepared for days and nights and weekends and holidays.
Yep, you might be getting calls at 9, 10 o'clock at night, and it's important that you take them, because the way if you get into a political position and you're not supporting your constituents, they will make sure that the public knows the next time the election is called.
Because really, that's how an election is won, isn't it? I mean, it's hard for somebody who is trying to get known. It's a little easier for incumbents because that's what they base their campaign on. Well, you know, you called me. I did my best for you. I hope you remember that, you know, when you go to the polls. Is that, you know, how to approach politics on that one-on-one level?
It doesn't hurt. Most of the support that candidates seem to get are from door-to-door calls. The better fundraising tactics that are successful are when the actual candidate reaches out versus a volunteer or a letter or a phone call. So as much as the candidate can do, the more promising it will be to get that support from your constituents. But you can't do it all. So you have to kind of pick and choose and prioritize based on what you think is best and going to be more successful. And as somebody who is, say, if you're running and you've already been in that position, if you already have a rapport built, you already have your signs and all of those things from your last election. So there's also a financial benefit to running a second time versus your first time when you have those upfront costs.
So we spoke about social media and some of the very negative impacts of social media, but is it important to have that social media presence when you're running and as an elected official?
More than ever, because when you look at the way in which people communicate nowadays, it tends to be more online versus in person, especially with COVID-19. The world seems to have still slowed down, and you do have to depend on social networks to communicate. It's a great way to reach a wide audience in an efficient manner. And really, it comes down to learning. You learn a lot from reading other people's posts, especially if you go under hashtag NLFolly. So it's going to give you a better perspective on how you should handle yourself, knowing what others are thinking.
Which isn't always good.
No, not.
I say that lightheartedly, but of course, there's a lot of people who reach out in that way and are very earnest in their approach. But it's about tone too, isn't it? Because tone is so important, and sometimes when you misinterpret tone, or if you are communicating online and your tone is misinterpreted, then as we've seen. All hell can break loose. So are there ways in which you can learn, you know, the best approaches? Not everybody has that gut instinct for how to convey a message, but are there any courses available in that?
When you're looking at communications, any communications course, you have like Skillshare and all of these one-off platforms that offer things around how to communicate your tone properly. Proper use of grammar. If you know how to use grammar, it's easier to get your tone across. And you don't have to just type things out if you're on social networks. We see some candidates utilizing TikTok and Facebook Live and just putting short videos out there where you can see their personality. As long as you're making sure that they're accessible for people with disabilities and that you have that closed captioning, I think it's a great way to get people's attention without worrying about that text tone piece.
And of course, once you're in the political realm, you have lots of people to help you with that as well.
Exactly. You, by rights, if you have a campaign team, you should have someone, or at least one person who's focusing on the communications piece. As a candidate, you should be writing the more personal parts, but you should have that communications person available to basically make it prettier for you, have it posted at the right time, and to make sure that you're up to date with who's commenting on it so you don't miss any of that while you're out knocking on doors and doing everything else that you need to do as a candidate.
And no doubt advising you, you know, you can pursue this, but leave this one alone for now, if you know what I'm saying. Yeah. Because it does sound daunting, but there's always help along the way, isn't there?
Always, yes.
because just you talking to you, I feel a little overwhelmed, and I have no political aspirations whatsoever. But I just want to make that clear. But, you know, it does sound all very daunting, but, you know, do you have to have the right knit, so to speak? Do you have to have that kind of mindset that this is, or can you be an earnest person and still make a difference?
The most important thing is that you care about your community and that you have a specific, realistic, measurable plan in place based on the issues that are persistent in your particular district. I mean, it definitely looks more polished and you'll probably have less backlash if you have that team behind you to make sure you're okay, but it's definitely not possible, especially if you've been planning for a while and you have that strategy in place before you finally put your name on the ballot.
My guest today on Target is Courtney Clark. She's with Equal Voice. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today is with Equal Voice. It's Courtney Clark, and we've been talking about, you know, some of the challenges and some of the benefits of offering yourself for political life. Do you need a thick skin to offer yourself for public service, Courtney?
Yes. Yes, you're going to get, similar to what we spoke about earlier, you'll always get that criticism. It's not possible to make everybody happy. So having that general political criticism coming at you, be ready for that. It's something that we see everywhere. But when it comes to that more senseless gender-based harassment, that's not needed. So it's okay to feel a sting from that, but try to keep moving forward.
Yeah, so it's important to stay focused and on the overall goal instead of getting distracted by noise and nonsense, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where your campaign team is there and your supporters. And focus on that part of it. Focus on your vision and what you want to do. And that'll drown out the negativity overall.
And that's why I suppose that the support of family and friends is so important, because that's a big consideration for a lot of people. You know, not only is, you know, somebody might say, well, you know, I'm big enough and ugly enough to handle all of this. I think I have a thick enough skin, but I do worry about my kids. I do worry about my parents. I do worry about the people in my life who might end up, you know, feeling very badly about all of this.
Definitely. And especially sometimes when it comes to trolling, if you have a picture of your family in your profile, they may, you know, you might be putting your own children up for that type of criticism. So it's just being very mindful of how this does not just affect you, but all of your loved ones, and make sure that they're aware that that's going to be a thing before you do put your name on the ballot, and really lean on one another to keep focusing on what's at stake.
What motivates a person to run?
Well, for a lot, it's just hitting their own barriers in life, whether it comes to a traumatic life event or having some sort of oppression in their own life. Sometimes you see that people grew up in political families and that's all they know, or they're a part of a business or a sector of the economy that they believe that they could really bring some extra support to the table because of their own experience. So there's a number of reasons why people choose to run.
Indeed, and a sense of duty, too. Some people have a very strong sense of duty to the community and making a difference within the community and doing those in kind of leadership-type roles or on the ground.
Yeah, a lot of these community leaders of our nonprofits, often what gets them to finally put their name on the ballot is when they've hit so many walls of policies and procedures of the government that they can't do what they know is right for the community based on what's available to their community organization. So that's when you can't do something because of policies and procedures and you see something that needs to be changed, sometimes it means that you have to be that person that enters politics to do it yourself.
How big of a commitment is running?
Well, you will likely, depending on what your career is, it might be a conflict of interest, so you may have to leave. You may have to take a leave. You may have to go down part-time. If you're a business owner, you know, you're going to be 24/7, so really decide if your business can stay afloat and stay organized while you're doing this. And, yeah.
Sorry, I've lost track of where I'm going. Diverse voices are absolutely important. There is no question. But what impact in the end does it have? We've often seen vocal candidates go into political roles only to go silent because of the push and pull factors within the party system. Is that part of what discourages people from running? And how do you prevent that from discouraging you?
Well, it's having open communication. It's having knowing what you're in for up front. So any of those hesitations you have, go to a party leader and talk to them. Politicians are happy to sit down over a phone call, a Zoom meeting, or a coffee to go through those with you. And there's no shortage of people out there that you can reach out to. So really speak to someone who's done it to see if maybe what you're worrying about is an issue. Maybe it's a bigger issue than you realize. So knowing someone who's been in that experience is probably the most beneficial way that you can be prepared for what's to come.
And that's the key, isn't it? Preparation. If you prepare yourself in a certain way, rather than worrying about things or wondering what if, prepare yourself, get as knowledgeable as possible. Does that help?
Definitely. And when your will to help community is bigger than the sense of fear, then, you know, that anything is possible. So everybody has worries and hesitations before they go in. You're completely uprooting your life and making yourself public. So that's, you're not alone. That's not unusual. But it's taking the steps to find out how your personal experiences will be affected by political life.
And you mentioned it before, and I asked the question about, you know, how important it is it to have backers and that money behind you. But you mentioned about fundraising, and that's a reality that I think a lot of people who aren't involved in the political process, or at least not hands-on, don't really understand how vitally important that is. So what do you need to know to help raise money for your campaign, because it takes a lot of money, and to continue that support through your time in office and into the next election?
Well, you need to prioritize the low-hanging fruits first. So your closest family members and friends, asking them for support, making them realize the realities that elections are expensive. They can sometimes be anywhere between $25,000 to $50,000 at a provincial scale. So, you know, get those low-hanging fruits and easy wins first. Then look at what your views are, whether it's for yourself or your party, and think about the industries and the organizations that would be most receptive to that. Reach out to those first, and then reach out to others afterwards. Talking when you're going around on the campaign trail and talking to people, if you find out they're business owners or you're going around having a coffee at your local coffee shop, maybe that's worth talking to the owner of that to see if you can get their vote and get some support, because there are some great tax credit benefits that are associated with fundraising for politics.
Do you need a policy platform?
It certainly helps. It's one thing to make promises for programs and things like that, but policy is the more sustainable part of governance and is what allows those types of projects to exist and the support for different groups of communities can get. So you need to have a bit of both, really.
So is it important to know, how those factors work when it comes to setting a policy platform ahead of time? It's one thing to set a policy, but is your policy realistic?
Exactly. So there are a lot of great promises that are made, but you need to look at, are they realistic? Is it going to bring a return on the investment that we're putting into it, especially with our current economic state? Is there a strategic collaboration? So, for example, the self-service increases, that is split between the municipal governments involved. There's about 11 or so, the provincial government and Bell. So that kind of investment will then give more self-service to all of these communities, which will boost small business, which will help students thrive and all of that stuff, the tourism industry. So recognizing, is there a return on the interest? Is it feasible? All of those things are important.
My guest today on Target is Courtney Clark. She's with Equal Voice NL. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today on Target is Courtney Clark. She's the media liaison for Equal Voice NL. And Courtney, Equal Voice is right across the country, of course. Equal Voice NL doing the work, I assume, that is being done right across the country. What kind of services do you offer?
Well, we are a very, we have a very attainable membership fee where it'll give you complete access to our network across the country. We have our national campaign schools, which cover pretty well every aspect that you need to know about yourself before entering into a campaign. We have different seminars set up here and there, support meetings, and different things like that. So, for example, I took the National Campaign School a couple of months back. I got to have comprehensive conversations with people like Yvonne Jones or Jody Wilson-Raybould, and people that I otherwise wouldn't have had an opportunity to talk to face-to-face. So there's a great collaboration and network potential there.
Is that a good idea as well, is getting to know other women who have been there, done that, who've gone through the trenches, some of the surprises they may have come across the way? Because you can be as prepared as you want to be, and something can happen, and you go, well, I had no idea that this is how this aspect of things work. And I've talked to politicians for a very long time, and almost every single one of them tells me there's always something that really surprise them that they weren't prepared for. So is that important too, to try to get those opportunities to talk to candidates, people who are in elected life, and just get a feel for what it's like?
Yeah, and politicians are pretty open to answering any questions you may have because they've been through it. They understand the hesitations. They know people who've had similar worries. And the more knowledge and perspective that you can give yourself, the more you're prepared for it. You will inevitably be surprised by things. Politics is quite a show in and of itself. You know, you never know what's going to hit you. But the more you know, the more prepared you're set up to be able to handle it, process it, and react to it properly.
Even political watchers think they're fairly up on how it all works. But, you know, what we see is really the theater of politics in the media and in other the social media sources. We see the politics of it, the theater of it. But the behind the scenes stuff is, mm-hmm. I think, the eye opening part is the part that people, when they see how it works and the reasons why it works and what does work and what definitely doesn't work.
Yeah, and what works for one district or for one candidate in the same district might not work for you. There's a lot of different trial and error there. But also, you know, there's no way you could be prepared for all of it, but politics is like an iceberg. You see maybe 10% of it. The other 90% is all behind the scenes.
You mentioned some of the work that Equal Voice is doing, the campaign schools and the like. Has it been a little more challenging now during COVID?
If anything, it's opened up more opportunities because if we were holding these campaign schools in person, we would have to have people travel to, say, St. John's to get accommodations, and that might not be feasible for someone who is all the way in Port of Bath that wants to be a part of this. So this actually opens up a lot of opportunity for people who are living more rurally because that we don't have to do it in person. There's less cost to the program, so there might be some cost savings there on how much it costs to do it. And when I did the National Campaign School, I was the only one from Newfoundland, but we had people from Yukon and all over the country that would not have had an opportunity to be part of it otherwise.
I know Equal Voice has done work in getting people to sit in on the legislature and in Parliament in particular. Is that an eye-opening experience for a lot of the people who come through your ranks?
Oh, definitely, because they get to see the actual conversations happening in time and get to see how people react with one another and what it's like, especially for, say, across party lines. So it's an eye-opening experience to what you will be a part of when you do become part of politics.
Indeed, and because a lot of the conversation that happens in the legislature, a lot of people are not even privy to it. You often hear some of the back and forth behind somebody who's speaking, but you don't see, you know, the looks and the gestures, and the people are communicating and doing it sometimes respectfully and sometimes not so respectfully. But that's, all a part of the theater as well. And in the end, it's my understanding, just having been in these kinds of circles for quite some time as a journalist, a lot of these people really like each other.
Oh yeah, we, and even Equal Voice, if you look at our leadership team, there's two PC supporters, two Liberal supporters, an NDP supporter. We are an example of how you can run this kind of thing and support one another, even though we don't really have the same we don't all agree with the intricate details, but we have the same values and the same needs for the community to be supported. So, you know, it's community over party affiliation.
How long has Equal Voice been around?
The Newfoundland chapter itself has been around for probably a little under 10 years, and our current team has been the leadership team for about a year or so.
Right. So it's within the social media world. I was going to ask you, you know, how have things changed, if at all, pre versus post social media?
Well, we have more of an opportunity to support and profile all of our female candidates, which is great. So we've really been utilizing that. And we have better access to communication to people to find out what the issues are. So if anything, similar to politicians needing to know what other sides of politics are saying by following social networks, us being online allows us to learn way more in depth about the issues that are around and how we can support.
So how are the parties doing this time around, this particular year, in offering up a more diverse slate?
Well, I mean, this is a record-breaking year for female candidates. There's about 40 females running this year in comparison to 29 in 2019 and 33 in 2015. So year over year, we're doing good. We see huge increases in the Liberal and NDP party. Liberals have 14 female candidates and one non-binary candidate. NDP sees 17. NL Alliance hasn't changed. They have one candidate that's female this year and a very unnotable decrease of one in the PCs with 9 females running. In terms of other areas of intersectionality, I haven't seen any breakdowns released from other parties yet, but the NDP has stated that there's about 15% Indigenous representation. While we haven't seen any overly visible disabilities represented, we have seen candidates across all parties talking about their experience with disabilities, chronic illnesses, and mental health struggles. And in the LGBTQ community, we're seeing Liberal Gemma Hickey stepping up, who is non-binary. We have NDP Jennifer McCreet, who is a member of our trans community. So while the numbers aren't exactly where they need to be, this is the highest they've been, and it's great to see any increase in diversity. Really, it's the most important results are not how many women are running in this election or how diverse the runnings are. That's part one. What's most important is how many women and diverse groups that can be elected come February 3rd.
And of course, that's up to the electorate to make those decisions. So how do you, I guess, make your voice heard and speak and resonate with the voter?
Well, be present, put yourself out there. I've seen some really cool engagement ideas with COVID, like, again, utilizing Facebook Live and looking at the different support groups within your community, if there are any that exist. We see street bubbles where the campaigner will say, I'm at this area to socially distance and talk safely, or give me your address and I'll come straight to you. There's another candidate who is engaging youth and females on the door-to-door campaign so they can become more engaged and see the political process for themselves. So it's putting yourself out there and being welcoming and saying that you want to talk to everybody, even those who don't support what you're putting out there as your platform, because you are there to support everybody, not just your vision.
How many of the current candidates have come through Equal Voice?
I don't know the exact number, but quite a few of them are our members.
That must be very encouraging for you.
Oh, definitely. And when we as Equal Voice talk about needing diversity at the decision-making table, we're not saying vote for women because they're women. We're not advising people to value gender over competency or capabilities. And we're not saying don't vote for men. There's more to candidates than simply being a woman or being Indigenous or being a member of the LGBTQ community. One look at their platform or one conversation with a candidate quickly proves that. But that part of their identity, being a woman, having a disability, and so on, it's an important part of them and their platform for two reasons. Because, you know, as we've already discussed, of the 130 or so people running, they're in the same campaign, the same province, the same time. Yet candidates of diverse backgrounds experience more barriers and more harassment in elections compared to white male candidates. Similar to what we hear over the pandemic, we're all in the same storm, but not the same boat. And second, not only do these candidates have particular expertise in their lived experience from being part of a more vulnerable group in society, but these candidates have more diverse backgrounds. They're more easily able to understand how their experience relates to other forms of oppression and intersectionality, making them more empathetic. So more diversity means more benefits for us all, and the research backs that up.
Indeed, because when you become elected, of course, you're representing all voices in the community. So it's important to know as much as you can possibly know about people's experiences.
Yeah, and research shows women and people of color are much more collaborative with one another. So with greater diversity, you then see more multi-partisan decision-making, which means that we see political leaders crossing party lines to make decisions not based on party goals, but on the greater good of society at large. We see better bills passed, which are more comprehensive and passed more efficiently than you'd otherwise see. And we also see that governments with higher percentages of female leadership see more effective policy enhancements term over term in regards to education, healthcare, and social policy. So at the end of the day, whether you're engaged in politics or not, it affects you and it affects your loved ones. The more diversity we have at the table, the more insights are considered and the less amount of people fall through the cracks. I often like to think of politics as a candle. Lighting one candle with another does not lessen the flame of the first candle. And it's important to remember that the more rights and support for others does not mean less rights or support for yourself.
So we've got the municipal election coming around. It's a little too late if you wanted to get involved in the provincial election, but there's always the next one, and presumably that's going to be in another 4 years' time. We don't know that yet. We'll soon find out, though. So if you're listening now and you're that person, who says, this is something I've always wanted to do, where do they get started? What should they do first?
Well, I would recommend reaching out to all of the people currently sitting in your municipal government and having conversations with them about just the realistic side of it all, because municipal politics is much more on the ground, grassroots stuff versus provincial or federal. And also, you know, municipalities, NL is a good resource. If you are, you don't have to be a female to be part of Equal Voice. We completely welcome male allies and we'll offer support as well. So, I mean, if you want to reach out to Equal Voice, reach out to us. But there's a lot of support available for you to get that insight before you start your own campaign.
And are there other supports outside of Equal Voice as well that are in the community that you're aware of, that you work with, for instance, that might also be able to offer assistance and help?
Well, if you're in the university community, there's the political science department. There's a lot of well-seasoned political scientists that would be happy to speak to you about overall theories and things that you should know. There's a ton of online resources, but I think the key thing is to talk to the people already elected in your municipality, because they know upfront what the issues are and what the issues are right now.
And your final thoughts?
Well, you know what? It's a good election. We're seeing great numbers. But I just want to kind of speak directly to the female candidates. When it comes to dealing with the gender-based issues that you face, of course, do what you think is best in handling it. It's not easy, but oftentimes no reaction is better than any reaction, because reaction is what trolls look for. And I often think back to Michelle Obama's "when they go low, you go high" statement. What they say about you is a reflection of their own insecurities and unconscious bias. So don't engage. Keep your eye on your goals. Know you're not alone. You're not what they insinuate you are. Don't be afraid to lean on your campaign team. And let's go out and win this election to show them just how much women in all forms of diversity are needed in our provincial leadership positions.
Courtney Clark, a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll be back tomorrow. We're going to be talking about COVID-19. So stay tuned for that. We're going to be talking about it on a more global scale than just here in Newfoundland and Labrador, but also with those numbers in mind. So stay tuned, and thanks for listening.